The Missouri Football Tigers look to win on homecoming over Auburn for week 8, coming off a 45-3 thrashing of UMass on the road. Non-conference schedule behind them, and now back on to SEC play. They have not won an SEC game since September 21st. They will take the field against Auburn on October 19th. So, good opportunity for them to get back on track in the SEC. They get an easy get-right game against UMass. But now the challenge really starts for them. They have Alabama coming up on the schedule after this. I'm Joey Van Zimmerman, one of your football reporters here on the All Things Mizzou podcast, joined by Michael Samps, as always. Michael, how are you doing on homecoming week?
No, that's exciting. I haven't had the opportunity to experience a homecoming yet, so it should be fun. I think Auburn's going to be an interesting test, a very unique test for Missouri this year. They're 2-4. I'd like to think they're a little bit better than that record. But, you know, again, Missouri, we got to be careful saying the Tigers this week, don't we? That's going to be confusing.
Yeah.
But Missouri took care of business against UMass. That was no surprise. Not sure how much we really were able to get from that besides a couple things. So nothing crazy there. But yeah, this Auburn team has talent. They, you know, they've been one of the better recruiting teams in the country. They still are. They're doing work on the recruiting trail right now. And they're a talented team. We're going to hit on some of the stuff in a second, but if they can limit some of those reoccurring errors, that they've, you know, they see game by game on a game by game basis, I don't think it's going to be as big of a margin of victory or defeat for Missouri fans as some of them think. So I think it's going to be a very interesting test for sure, but I think getting back in front of the home fans for Missouri, you know, might be a good confidence booster, especially on homecoming week. It's fun.
Yep.
I would imagine it's going to be a pretty, pretty excited and lively, crowd. So, I think they have that in their favor, but it's, going to be an interesting game. I'm excited to watch some football at Faurot Field.
Yeah, exactly. As you mentioned, Michael, Auburn is 2-4, but Missouri is only 4.5-point favorites on this game, which should tell you enough about the competition Auburn is going to bring here. They played Oklahoma close a few weeks ago, only losing by 6, and they really held it really tight all the way until the fourth quarter when Oklahoma went on a scoring run. So certainly someone Missouri has to take seriously in this week here. You know, looking back at this UMass game, like you said, Michael, not much to take away from it. I do think, though, some things we learned, some good performances from the team that we haven't seen before. You know, they looked better passing-wise, and I think it'll be interesting to see it just how much of a grain of salt we need to take that with when they go out there on the field against Auburn, because ultimately that's, you know, figuring out whatever is going on with the passing offense is going to be what determines their season here. Like Eli Drinkwitz said last week, he knows that they can run the ball. Everybody should know that they can run the ball effectively with Nate Noel, with the help of Marcus Carroll as well. So going to be interesting to see what they roll out here against Auburn. You know, speaking of that passing game, getting that going, and what we actually learned against UMass, we did see Joshua Manning score his first career touchdown, and he was someone who you probably heard a lot of out of fall camp, just because he was stacking good practices on top of each other, and it really sounded like he was going to pierce through a pretty stacked wide receiver room. And, you know, I think part of it has been the fact that the Missouri offense has been trying to figure out what their passing game looks like, and they haven't really had the time on how to figure out how to utilize a utility gadget player like Joshua Manning. But he got his opportunity against UMass, took a play action rollout, 63 yards to the house. So that was interesting to see him. And Joshua Manning was a track star in high school too. But going into the season, we kept on talking about his physicality and everything, but man, he showed how dangerous he can be in space too. I think maybe not as a pure yak guy like Luther Burden or Mookie Cooper is, but get him the ball and get him running downhill basically, and he can do some work. Michael, what was your thoughts on the one snap of Joshua Manning we saw in this game as for such him?
he's, you know, been sprinkled in and out of the offense so far. Has a couple mm-hmm. receptions, but nothing crazy. So it's good. It's obviously good to see. But yeah, it's not a surprise really at all. I mean, this is something we saw he was capable of. And again, it goes for Manning or, you know, any of the guys you could get. You know, we haven't seen a guy like Marquise Johnson get super involved yet. Other guys that are very capable of getting the ball down the field if they just have it in their hands. So if you give it to them, they can make plays. I think that's the biggest takeaway from Manning's touchdown.
Yeah, exactly. And that's been the interesting thing with this Mizzou offense so far this season too, is that, yeah, they've had a diverse receiving core. It's pretty much been even involvement for a lot of guys at the top there, but it does feel like there's a lot of playmakers that either coming off of last season, Brett Norfleet, Marquise Johnson, that showed a lot of flashes that we were expecting to be really involved this year, or guys that we heard a lot in fall camp. And I was like, okay, these guys are going to be, big pieces this year. And then they just kind of haven't been, they haven't given them those opportunities. And I know Coach Drinkwitz talked about this week of people on the outside talking about not, passing the ball around too much and not getting it to Luther Burden. And, I think getting him as many touches as possible is big, but, you do need to, spreading out the ball like they have been and increasing that even more to get those playmakers involved. Be interesting to see how that progresses. I think specifically another point I wanted to bring up was Brett Norfleet getting his first touchdown on the season and really making his first big play of the year. I mean, I believe he had around 10 catches on the season before this UMass game. But again, a guy that was expected to be a really big part of the passing game, someone who could really alleviate a lot of the struggles Missouri has had on third down in red zones, you would think, at least for a big body tight end who also has a really good amount of speed. But he's been dealing with that shoulder injury all the way since week one in the season. And the difference from NFL and college football, and obviously it helps that we're getting SEC availability reports, but in NFL, if we would know if this was a lingering issue for Brett Norfleet, and college football, it's kind of, we don't know. But from Coach Trinkwitz's words this week and the lack of involvement with him and the increasing involvement for him over the past few weeks, especially in UMass, it would seem like he's getting back to healthy and they're going to be able to utilize him quite a bit more. And that could really open up a lot of things for this Mizzou offense. It seemed like Brady has a great connection with him. Coach Rinkowitz also mentioned having Jordan Harris fully healthy. And it seems like, again, I talked about this a few weeks ago, Jordan Harris being a guy that is seeing opportunities, not only because Brett Norfleet was dealing with that injury, but also because Jordan Harris has done the most of those opportunities. And I mean, he's a true sophomore too. So potential that they still see in him there. And Tyler Stevens fully being healthy, saw all three of them getting more involved against UMass. Michael, what are your thoughts on this tight end room being fully healthy and what they can add to this Missouri offense going ahead?
Well, I love Norfleet's route running ability for a guy of his size. There was so much chatter, whether it was social media or analysts or whatever before the season, saying he could truly have a breakout year. And obviously that hasn't happened yet. But again, it was just another, UMass game was just a glimpse of what Norfleet could really do. It was a beautiful route that ended up getting him that bigger completion that eventually led to, him scoring his touchdown. Just another guy. It's kind of a pleasant, pleasant feeling to see him getting involved in the offense. And obviously, Jordan, the tight end room hasn't been the biggest, area of focus when it comes to getting them the ball. I think Tyler Stevens has a couple receptions and so does Jordan Harris. Yeah, Jordan Harris has one and Tyler Stevens has four. So that's obviously not a lot of looks at all, but they're both capable of making plays. Jordan Harris is a great pass and run blocker. So I think that has really been what's, got him on the field the most. We saw a little bit of Tyler Stevens last season. He hasn't been seen his name, like I said, called much at all, but they're all capable of being a nice dump down option for Brady Cook. So that being said, Brett Norfleet is more than a dump down option. He has shown that he can, run routes effectively. And then again, move with the ball in his hands. Goes back to what I was saying earlier. He can make plays. He's physical. He can, break off tackles and then has some nice downfield speed as well. So just get him the ball, I think, is the moral of the story. And it was nice to see that.
Moving ahead to the offensive line here, a position or a unit that we saw a little bit of rotation on in this UMass game. And I was a little bit bubbling over the past few weeks, it felt like, with some, you know, Mitch Walter, since the start of the season, has been involved as a sixth offensive lineman on quite a few outside runs. And then this game against UMass, fully in the lineup. He took 33 snaps in this game, 23 at right tackle for Armour Minmu, and then 10 at left guard in for Caden Green. But what I draw that up to in the game was, they want to get another look at Mitchell Walters, even though he was a starter for them in 2022. He's a veteran, an established guy, but they just want to see what he can add as a swing player, reliable backup. But Coach Rinkwood said on Tuesday of this week that expect more rotation in with Mitchell Walters. And, you know, he adds a lot of versatility. And, you know, he continuously talked about creating competition on every position, but specifically the offensive line. So it'll be interesting to watch what happens there. Caden Green, I think he has shown his potential, but there's also been some times where he hasn't been the most reliable. He's, you know, as it seems specifically with stump blitzes, delayed blitzes, he struggled with that. There was a one against the Texas A&M game where it's a delayed rush from this guy right over the A gap, and Caden Green thinks he's just dropping back in coverage, and so then he goes to the left tackle, and then there's a wide open hole for this guy. It might have been Nick Scordon, right to Brady Cook. And so I think, you know, even though Caden Green has, you know, was really experienced as a true freshman at Oklahoma, he's still a sophomore and might take some more time to learn here. Obviously the youngest starter along that offensive line, which is a pretty experienced group outside of him. And then Armand Minbu, interesting to see there. With Green, could just be needing to get more experience, and we'll see if Mitch Walters has continued to be rotated like Trinkwood said he would be. Michael, any thoughts along the offensive line there?
I think it's unique. Mitch Walters is in a unique position where he can play multiple spots on the offensive line. And even it doesn't have to be someone struggling or someone just doesn't deserve to start. It could be someone needs a break, which I think has been a little bit of the case so far up until this point. But having a fallback option where you can throw an experienced guy who has starting reps, who's been with the team for a while and knows what's expected of him, having a guy you can throw into the rotation is not a bad option at all. I think what you mentioned about Green is just maybe an experience thing. With the slightly increased level of competition, he's getting, you know, a little more athletic, pass rushers and stuff like that. So I think he's going to get there. He's shown flashes, but having Walters as a fallback is certainly not a bad option at all. And, it'll be interesting to see if they keep throwing him in there. Again, UMass is UMass, but they showed it was effective in some way or another. So I would be surprised if we didn't see him this week, but it'll be interesting to see how they utilize that, you know, rotation moving forward.
Turning the page to the defensive side of the ball for Mizzou here. This was another, you know, just like the offense, maybe not too much we learned about this unit as a whole, but we did see some guys turn some heads. One of those being Nick Rodriguez, lead the team with 12 tackles in this game. We didn't find out that Nick Rodriguez was really going to be getting the opportunity at all in this one until about an hour and a half before the game, and he made the most of it for sure. He had a few great plays where you could just see his agility and being able to track guys down. When we were talking about earlier this year, we had a whole episode talking about who are these freshmen that are going to be able to get an opportunity in their first season. I know we talked about Trajan Greco. I don't think we talked about Nick Rodriguez. And now with Cleo Jacobs missing the rest of the season with an injury, he really has a chance to earn a name for himself. Michael, what did you think about Rodriguez's game here, and what should we know about him as a prospect?
He's a great open field tackler, and he didn't miss any tackles against UMass, which, again, you have to, you know, weigh the level of competition a little bit, but still, true freshman hasn't played much to go in and just do his job as about as effective as he could have. You know, was impressive. I noticed tackling angles was a big thing. We mentioned that last week as missing some tackles and, you know, poor angles. He seemed to excel in that area. I think he had one penalty, I believe, towards the end of the game, and it might have been a face mask or something like that. So obviously those are things you can clean up. And wasn't perfect. I think he was a pretty solid in coverage as well. Didn't stand out as, you know, too, you know, overly great or overly awful. So it seems like a great plug and play guy, or, you know, guy you can plug in for Jacob's role. It'll be interesting to see how much they lean on him compared to the veterans they have in that area now. Maybe they're going to play more than they have previously, and Rodriguez is going to, you know, play a increased role, but still pretty minimal, or if he's just going to consume those snaps that Khalil Jacobs was playing. I don't know if Rodriguez is exactly fit to play the same, you know, athletic blitz middle linebacker role that Jacobs did. I think Rodriguez certainly has that athleticism, but that is a unique role that Jacobs played, I believe. So it'll be interesting to see if he can step in and do that. But I think he showed that he's a guy that now deserves to be on the field and is going to be capable of taking over, maybe not completely Khalil Jacobs' role, but in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, exactly. And also with Jacobs, defensive end Joe Moore suffered an injury ahead of this game and will miss the rest of the season too. He had 74 snaps on the season and was pretty much fourth guy in that defensive end rotation there. I know a lot of people, again, pointed to Williams Winery. That was even the report, you know, Tiger Talk Radio Network, after it was announced that Joe Moore would be out with the injury. They broke the news and said expect Williams Winery to get opportunity in this game. And he did. You know, he got 16 snaps in that one. He recorded his first career sack. But it was mainly, again, Ja'Kai Lane who got most of those opportunities. And I think, again, he made the most of them there. I mean, Michael, just your thoughts on Joe Moore being out for the season and what they're going to do at edge now.
Joe Moore is an explosive player. That's going to be a guy that you notice is not on the field. But Ja'Kai Lane, wasn't necessarily surprised to see him step in over Williams Winery at all. It's just an experience thing, and he showed he had a couple impressive games early in the year. He recorded a sack. I can't remember off the top of my head who it was against. Either Vanderbilt or maybe it was Buffalo. I can't quite remember. But Ja'Kai Lane recorded a sack and also showed his ability to get to the quarterback. We haven't seen him much, really, up until UMass. So another pleasant surprise there. Williams Winery, you could tell that the talent and the skill is there, but he's still a little raw. The athleticism is there. He is massive and just moves like it's ridiculous. It's very impressive. His speed for his size, which is kind of a common theme, I feel like, on this Missouri team. But, you know, how do I say this? There's more to earning playing time than just a star ranking, right? And, you know, that's a label for the like a projected talent or the potential talent that a player can have. You still have to walk in and, or, you know, get into a team and earn those snaps. I think there's a reason only a few true freshmen every year really stand out on their respective teams, because most of them start at the bottom of the depth chart, right? And it's not an insult or saying a player's bad or good. It's just that they have to learn the system and learn how to play college football, because they're not going to step in and beat everybody like they did in high school. It doesn't just apply for Winery. It applies for the other 32 five-star or 31 five-star prospects that came in the class of in this class. So maybe for the fans that say are confused why he wasn't playing from day one or hasn't been playing consistently, you mentioned it earlier, they're gonna play the best guy, right? And if he's not the best guy, then he's not gonna see the field.
Yeah, and I think looking at Williams, it's kind of an interesting example of the line you have to teeter as a college football coaching staff in the day and age when players can just, if they're not getting the playing time they want, go to a school that will give them that. And I'm not suggesting, I have no idea anything about how Williams Winery is feeling about his decision to go to Missouri. But just the fact of having to get these guys on the same page as you, of having trust in the process. It's something I was talking about with Coach CY at Men's Basketball Media Day last week, of having to get these guys bought in, not only to your program, obviously, but to be honest with them. Tell them, look, here's our plan for you. Here's our timeline for you. If you stick to it, it's going to yield these results. And so I'm sure they've got to have a plan for Williams Winery, one of the top recruits in Mizzou history. And we'll be interesting to see the development of him.
I think it's also worth mentioning really quick that you've seen in the last couple of years impressive first year to second year jumps on Missouri specifically, whether that's, you know, a freshman who redshirted, taking that year off to practice and then, you know, going into the freshman year, maybe a guy like, you know, Nick DeLoach in that category, or a guy like Marvin Burks, who, you know, works his way through special teams and then is now the starting safety and is one of the Tigers' best defensive players. So you can't discount the idea of freshman to sophomore season growth. When you get a guy, when you get a five-star talent, right, there's no, or any of those top-ranked players, there's no guessing if they're going to stay for 4 or 5 years, right? It's a guessing game. You cross your fingers and, you know, you'd like to think most of these guys have a general idea of what their role is going to be, entering their freshman season. And I think there's enough college football played now to know that most true freshmen do not play a significant amount of snaps in their freshman season. And it's not because they're not good enough. It's because there's experienced guys in front of them, but they also have to learn the landscape of the game, the physics, get stronger, get faster, get more athletic, and the IQ side of things as well. They can't just walk in, like I said, and beat everybody. So you don't know when you get a guy that's ranked that high if he's going to stay for all 4 years, but you can lay out a plan for that person. So by the time they're junior years, you're saying, you know, you're going to be here starting at this position. You have good NFL looks on you, right? So you can really only cross your fingers.
Right, exactly. All right, moving on to this game against Auburn. Michael, I mean, before we do that, anything else you want to mention from this UMass game? Maybe the stadium?
Yeah. I mean, it looked nice. Looked like a nice backdrop. the only other thing I think of is, you know, it's always nice. I think we probably hit on this, you know, the first 2 weeks against Murray State and Buffalo. It's always nice to see some younger guys get into the game and, you know, that we're able to spotlight them, because you knock on wood that this is the future, you know, future of your football team. So we talk about guys like Winery and Rodriguez and Trajan Greco, you know, made a good open field tackle. I believe Jalen Brown got in the game. So other young guys getting to see the field is always a positive. We didn't mention Kewin Lacey at the running back spot, but he got in and, you know, did a little bit of work there, and Tavoris Jones as well. So it's always nice to see the young guys or less experienced guys get in. Because like I said, they're not the bottom of the depth chart because they're not good. It's just because they're young and need the experience. So you knock on wood, these guys are going to be the future of your team, and it's nice to see the flashes of their potential, I guess. So it's not the worst thing in the world to have a game like UMass where you know you're going to be able to handle business pretty easily and get some of those guys in.
Absolutely. On to this game with Auburn. Last time Mizzou played Auburn, just a brutal, brutal game, but really the only – well – There's more things similar than just Brady Cook. But welcoming Auburn back here, back to Mizzou. First time Hugh Freeze and Eli Drinkwitz, good friends. First time they're going together against each other now with their respective teams. And looking at this one, obviously they got quarterback Peyton Foran, an experienced guy. And then they have running back Jacquees Hunter, who has been as good as ever this season, just a tough guy to bring down. Michael, what can you tell us about this running back?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. He's physical and does not like to be brought down at all. He's having, you know, looks like he's having one of the better seasons of his career. I would imagine he's going to be one of the focal points of practice this week, is stopping him and containing the run, which they've done, you know, besides Le'Veon Moss, they've done a pretty good job in that area. That being said, I mean, you look at a guy like Le'Veon Moss who torched Missouri. You look at Jarquez Hunter. Those are pretty, you know, two pretty evenly, you know, talented running backs, and it's going to be a massive test to stop him.
Absolutely. I think, you know, a little bit of a different running style than Moss. So it's going to be a different, unique test for them. Going hand in hand with that running back there because of how RPO-centric this Auburn offense is, talented receiving core for Auburn, led by Kondre Lambert-Smith, transfer from Penn State there. Michael, what about this receiving core? Six out to you, all of them?
Yeah, I mean, all of them, right? I mentioned I'm an NFL draft guy. This should get you excited for the next four draft classes. They have freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, all very talented. Lambert Smith's having the best year of his career so far, 510 yards, six touchdowns, just about to eclipse his best statistical year at Penn State. So physical guy, jump ball guy that they can toss the ball down the field to, and Peyton Thorne probably trusts him the most of anybody on that team. Then you have the three true freshmen, Malcolm Simmons, Cam Coleman, and Perry Thompson. Cam Coleman, I believe, was one of the highest-rated recruits in the country last year. I could be wrong, but I mean, I think that talent speaks for himself, and the fact that he's getting involved in this offense is impressive. Same thing with Malcolm Simmons. He's our second-leading receiver. 260 yards and two touchdowns, and then Perry Thompson only has four receptions this year, but that's 423 yards. So obviously he is an explosive playmaker, big, physical, you know, tight end target. Rivaldo Fairweather, he's 6'4", 252 pounds. So he's a guy that I like to get the ball to and let him do his thing. He's physical. And then you go down the list. Robert Lewis was a 900-yard receiver for Georgia State last year. So Sam Jackson could do it. Caleb Burton was a high-rated recruit. So you go down the list and the talent is still there. They could probably throw in, similar to Missouri, I don't want to compare the two, but similar in the manner where you could throw in just about anybody, and they can go make plays. So it's there's a lot of guys they have to worry about stopping. It's difficult to say which one's going to perform the best. You look at Lambert Smith and say that, you know, again, he's the target that Thorne trusts the most. But they have guys who can, you know, work with the ball in space too, just like Missouri. So it's going to be, again, we say it's an interesting challenge. This is probably the deepest receiver room, maybe A&M, but I looked down the list with this Auburn team, and they have six or seven guys that can hurt you in the air. So this is probably the most deep receiving room that Missouri's faced so far, and they're going to have to worry about stopping six or seven guys.
The issue for this Auburn team with all the talent they have there is the turnovers. That's what Eli Drinkwitz mentioned this week. Peyton Thorne, a 10 touchdown to 6 interception ratio, not great. And it'll be interesting game for this Missouri defense, as you mentioned, Michael. Flipping things over to the Auburn defense, their wide receiver group is filled with exciting young talent, and kind of the thing for the secondary too, where they're starting a lot of really young guys. They have two freshmen, two sophomores that are both taking quite a bit of snaps in the secondary there. And ultimately, I think it is a good opportunity for Missouri in this one to, you know, against UMass. Coach Drinkwitz talked about wanting to see some rhythm within the passing game. I think Auburn is another great opportunity to create some of that, prove that you can do it on SEC level. Because again, like we talked about last week, this team needs a lot of confidence, and the message after the UMass game is, oh, we got confidence from that one. It was a springboard. I'm sure there's a little bit of truth to that, but seeing that they can connect on passes, get into that rhythm again, seeing for Brady Cook that he can connect on those deep passes, I think would be huge for the confidence for themselves, but then also for the coaching staff to design some more plays for that. So Michael, what can you tell us about this young Auburn secondary?
Well, I think with our defense as a whole, the thing that really fascinates me is the amount of young talent that starts there, whether it's true freshmen or true sophomores. I just said that you don't see a lot of young players come out of the gun and start right away. And some of Auburn's best defenders happen to be very young. Obviously, in the secondary, you look at Caleb Harris at safety. You look at Kayan Lee, who's a true sophomore. So they have young guys back there. One of their best defensive players is defensive lineman Keldrick Falk, who was one of the highest graded defensive linemen last year in the entire country. So I'm going to have to go back on my word because they start a lot of young guys. And it's valuable experience. And I think those jumps, but like I said, those jumps between your freshman and sophomore year can be fascinating. It's going to be these are very talented players going against a very experienced Missouri offense. A lot of veterans on the offensive line, then obviously sprinkled throughout the entire team. A lot of guys who prove they can do it versus this Auburn team, who clearly they have the talent. They recruit at a high level every year, but not necessarily the same amount of experience. So I think that's going to be an interesting combination and how they go against each other. But Jaron Thompson's another experienced safety from Auburn or from Texas. So they have some guys back there, and Jake Crawford's a freshman. So yeah, a lot of young guys, and it's going to be interesting to see how they go against each other.
Moving things up to the front seven of this defense, led by Eugene Asante, inside linebacker there. A little bit more experience, strong unit there. Keldrick Falk, defensive lineman, leading the team with 5 sacks there. Jalen McLeod, App State transfer, who has 3 sacks on the season as well at nose tackle. Mike, what about this front seven and this pass rushing unit about Auburn sticks out to you?
This is one of the teams that's probably generated some of the most sacks to date that Missouri's played. Malik Blockton is very fun. He's a freshman as well. He's a massive guy, 6'3", 291. DeMarcus Riddick's a freshman linebacker, so going back to that same level of youth. But Keldrick Falk is just very, very impressive, and I would imagine he's going to be the guy that Missouri highlights as far as, containing somebody, 6'6", 288. That's a interesting, athletic profile, I guess, and he's a heck of an athlete too. And like you said, leads the team in sacks. So you kind of hit the nail on the head. They have some dudes. Eugene Asante, not off to his best start so far this year, only 17 tackles, but he's proved he's a veteran presence there. I don't know who Auburn's captains are, but I would imagine if he isn't, he is a leader on that defense. So this team's going to generate a lot of pressure and try to get to Brady Cook. I think those offensive tackles, Bright and Armand Membo, are going to have their hands full for sure.
Yeah, Keldrick Falk is just kind of built like that. The new wave, I guess you could say, of
for sure
edge players, of, just taller guys, taller, dense guys. I think forward to Rashawn Gary, maybe Max Crosby a little bit in that. He's a little bit more wider, though. Nick Bosa, Darius Robinson can throw him in there, too. So going to be a tough challenge. And, I Nick Scordon fit into that category as well. And Missouri had their hands full with him. So the Auburn team is certainly nothing to stuff that for Missouri this week. I still think they end up taking care of business and move on to 6-1. And for the rest of the season, it doesn't matter how pretty these wins are. They just got to win, take care of business week in and week out. Like I said, Alabama on the schedule next week, then a bye week, then Oklahoma. So we are really in this 3-game stretch that we've been talking about all season long, looking ahead to. So, Michael, any final thoughts before we wrap it up here?
Yeah, I think if you look back to the preseason and you look at this Auburn game, it probably appears as one that you think Missouri can handle pretty easily. Like I said, I think Auburn's better than their record. I still think Missouri is going to walk away with a win, but I don't think it's going to be pretty at all. It could be a low-scoring game. It could be a fourth-quarter heroics. I think the outlook on where Missouri sits now in their season, with how things have progressed and improved and regressed so far this season, it's not the same outlook looking ahead of this Auburn game. I think there might be a little bit of doubt from the outside that maybe this is a trap game that Missouri can drop. I still think they can do it. I think there was some signs of life in the Missouri offense last week. Going to need those to carry over. And if they do, I think that's going to be the key.
That'll be it for us on this episode of the All Things Mizzou podcast. We appreciate you tuning into this. Make sure you tune into the rest of our coverage on Missouri on SI. We'll have full coverage of the Auburn game. We got plenty of articles on everything we talked about today and some more looking ahead to the Auburn game. And then basketball season will be starting very soon here. So make sure you tune in to all of our coverage there. And we thank you for tuning into this one.
Starting the year strong is easier and more delicious with Omaha Steaks premium prepackaged proteins. From handcrafted USDA certified tender steaks to gourmet burgers, versatile chicken and pork, and more. Every steak is perfectly aged to maximize tenderness and hand cut by master butchers in America's heartland. Let Omaha Steaks deliver high-quality proteins right to your door. Visit omahasteaks.com and get an extra $35 off with promo code AUDIO at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.